Welcome. Today we're here for another table talk at the Microdosing Institute. We are Hein and Jacobien, and today we're in The Hague at the beautiful home of Regina Hess. She's been a friend and an advisor of the Microdosing Institute since its early days. And so who is Regina, first of all? Dr. Regina Hess is a clinical psychologist, a researcher, supervisor, and she holds many other roles and titles, including a PhD in transpersonal psychology. And she specialized in the multidimensionality of trauma and transformation for more than 20 years. She teaches internationally and is associated with the Mind European Foundation and as a developer and facilitator of integration programs and trainings for professionals. She works with plant medicine and psychedelics for many years and embraces the practice of microdosing too. And in our recent conversations, it showed that Regina's mission goes beyond therapeutic work and teaching. The aspects of ceremony, initiation, nature, the divine feminine, the shamanic worldview, symbolism and ethics, and many other topics have come up every time that we connect. And for sure, we will return to all of that in this conversation.
Well, hi, Regina. Welcome and thanks for inviting us in your house. Could you share a little bit more about your personal story? How do you get, as a medically trained person, get involved in psychedelic medicine and working with altered states of consciousness?
Yes, first of all, thank you for both of you coming here and having this opportunity for that podcast. I really appreciate our work together for many years. Yeah, there was really a big turning point in my life to really enter that field. I briefly want to share that to make really the point also how profound it is. I survived a tsunami in 2004 in Thailand and had a full-blown near-death experience. Like a miracle, I was thrown back into land and onto life, like a second life in this lifetime. And it came with a huge feeling of responsibility. Yeah. So what do I need to do with that? Yeah. Being here again. Yeah. And there was a clear message to bring together the spiritual experience of that profound near-death experience and the clinical, the medical, etc. That's when I decided, in addition to I'm a clinician from Germany, I am a psychologist, not a medical doctor, and worked many years in psychiatry, and then decided, okay, so I have to stand up for that, to bring these disciplines together. And all my life it was my private interest, so to say, spirituality, culture, anthropology. I traveled the world since I'm 14 years old. And then I really decided to stand up. So there's like a coming out in different processes. Then I did a PhD in transpersonal psychology in California, Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, and started studying near-death experiences to understand better this experience and to serve people also with that. And that's how I found about the psychedelic science aspect of psychedelics. And then I thought, wow, that can be a tool to work in such deep experiences. Yeah. And then very systematically in California, I studied with the pioneers, James Fadiman, yeah. Stanley Krippner, Rolf Metzner, many more. Yeah. Very systematically studied on a theoretical and research level, and also, of course, the practices that are available in Central South America on the level of indigenous approaches. But from the beginning, of course, I was very interested in the therapeutic application. Okay. And I would say that's really like, so the tsunami led that to my coming out of really bringing these fields together, not only in my private life, but in a professional academic life, but also therapeutic life. And that's kind of what I could describe. I'm the messenger always, messenger between the worlds, messenger between approaches. From the core, I'm integrative, so I work in the integration teams. Integration is kind of the core idea that I have for growth, for personal development, but also globally. And so the message from the tsunami was so profound that it led to this other coming out of standing up for psychedelic science. Yeah? And then when I came back to Europe, kind of like a miracle also again, the doors opened from the Swiss Medical Society of Psycholytic Therapy. They are like since the 60s, one of the pioneers here in Europe, yeah. Especially for the tradition of therapeutic application. And I got the opportunity to learn with them, to work with me, with them. I'm also in the team for developing trainings, psycholytic therapy trainings, etc. So that was like the second coming out, but I would say I could really point out, of course, personal experiences also, but I would really point out the MDMA research on PTSD,
yeah.
Because that makes the link to my expertise of trauma work. I'm really like, that's my life's work. Mm-hmm. 20 years, most severe cases of trauma. Also on a collective level in Germany, I worked for many, many years in big groups and in clinics also on war trauma, Germany second and First World War. And so my whole life is dedicated to, first of all, understanding my German, of course, heritage, very, very difficult heritage of a Nazi Germany, but also like how to grow beyond that. And I feel that's really the power that I can bring. Or even I would say to some extent, it makes sense for me that I was born in Germany, brought up in Germany, suffered quite a lot under all this. But now I have the maturity to move beyond that trauma and not get stuck or stay there. And so suddenly everything came together, you know, the spiritual and the psychological, the medical anyways. I'm in my first training, I'm a nurse, emergency, oncology ward. So I have a strong medical background. And then suddenly psychedelic science brought trauma to me. And then that was really the turning point, I would say, to stand up as a scholar, stand up as a therapist. And that was really like an ethical initiation then to say, I stand up for that, for these methods. I stand up for these possibilities with profound scientific research, therapy, etc., to help those people who suffer so much. So I would really say MDMA for PTSD treatment was like the professional calling, yeah?
Yeah.
And since then I developed further, being in the Mind Foundation, in the Swiss Foundation, contacts worldwide. I'm very much a networker, a messenger, as I said. And I work on many different levels, so it's more like I'm really like, I feel I'm weaving, constantly weaving dimensions together, weaving layers of experience together, weaving people together, organizations, countries, global. I'm a global citizen. I don't feel I belong to one country.
Mm.
I also always say, don't put me in a box, please. Yeah.
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 Wow. Just to break in here like a little bit. Wow. Mm-hmm. There's also already so many things to dive into and to dip into. Like I'm hearing intergenerational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma work in general, the transpersonal psychology, working with altered states. Which is very much opposed to a lot of the clinical work that's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
Even within the psychedelic
mm-hmm.
renaissance, there is a lot of, I would say, rigidness still. As in, okay, we should regard these substances really for what they are and what they do on a neurobiological level and neurochemistry-wise, but transpersonal psychology and all of your experience and everything you're combining and integrating right now actually shows us there is so much more happening,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And there is so much more beyond what we can measure with, you know, really good equipment and the best scientists in the world,
yes.
Can actually pin down. So maybe would you just like to elaborate a little bit more on what is it that you have learned by integrating all these different approaches?
I mean, I always draw on the concept of interconnectedness as the core concept. Everything comes together on that level, the multidimensionality of experience, the multidimensionality of science and beyond science, of course, yeah. And I always say we need to see the bigger picture to really get healing, yeah, and transformation. And this is very much also I draw on depth psychological approaches, mm-hmm. Jung. I'm very much trained in Jung also.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Jung said 1920, for example, like we are all suffering from a dissociative disorder in modern times. We are so much split from our own nature as humans and from the whole world and nature. So that's kind of my core, where I start weaving things together.
Yeah. And now we start to understand that even more now that we have a pandemic going
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely, it goes on and on and on. The ripple effect you can see. Yeah?
Yeah.
So the core concept for me that makes sense also to bring the traditions together is the interconnectedness. Our split, first of all, our split, and then the interconnectedness that can transform the world. And here comes in the link to psychedelic science and also to microdosing, yeah, that with the help of substances potentially that can also to some extent support that healing and transformation. So that's kind of the core where I put the things together.
Beautiful. Yeah. And when it comes to working with psychedelics, of course, there are a lot of do's and don'ts. And also, again, when you're bridging worlds, it can be a very, what do we call it? Like difficult territory to move into also as a facilitator. And you are training other facilitators and professionals and also people who are maybe familiar with altered states from breath work or dream work, but then psychedelics is, you know, really a step beyond. So what do you think is something that is just really important when we decide to work with psychedelics, either professionally or from a client-based perspective? What do you think is really important to understand?
I would really cite my elder teachers, behind me, who always say the first answer is also, for example, I work a lot with dance. I'm dance movement therapist also. I work with sound, music, which can be very inductive, can induce very deep states. Or I always say in any breathwork session, in any even normal therapy session, you could have complications, that people go into strong dissociation, any emergency. So on the one hand, we can have emergency and complications always, even sitting here on the table, And on the other hand, of course, there are layers and steps, and we need to know what we do. And the most important requirement is the self-work, to know ourselves, to be connected to ourselves, to know what we can do and not can do. And of course, not in that sense of psychedelics is for everybody, not at all. I always teach rather in a very critical way. Easily people get very hype and very enthusiastic and, wow, we can change the world. I always say, yes, I also want to contribute to change the world, but in a wise way. So I would say the one thing is, like, we need to know ourselves. We need to know what we do. We need to know complications. We need to have enough background. But also what I really learned so much from my teachers, but also from the experiences, we need to learn to be very humble, because every trip is different. We never know when we enter the trip how it will be, and or ceremony, whatever you want to call it, or treatment. And so I feel the humbleness gives the power that we can learn to move beyond ego, and that applies to all of us. It doesn't matter what setting. Also in the clinical study, we don't know how this research will go with that one patient, or how that session will be. One session is good, the other session is complicated. So it's the humbleness to be really in that moment. And that would be the second concept that I really would always interweave in my argumentation, would be being in the present moment, that only then we can really change, because then we can learn to feel, then we can learn to feel the surroundings. So that would be kind of the second core pillar that I address when I weave the things together.
Yeah, the present moment is quite an important one.
That is what a lot of people with microdosing experience, being more in the now, in the present moment. And that's why we believe or want to research more if it can be an aid for as a aftercare for treatments like that, that as a reminder of all the insights you get, and being more in the present moment is really key.
Yes, and that was, for example, a key moment for me that I entered also more the work with microdosing. I experiment for myself all the time here in Netherlands with the truffles, for example. I have many clients who experiment with the truffles here, and I really saw that phenomenon that they can feel they can feel better themselves, they can feel nature better. Many report this idea of, wow, I feel also more compassion for my partner or people, more mindfulness. In the best way, we cannot, of course, we cannot show the clear impact, that's not in that level, but that really was also a turning point for me to say, no, but I really support microdosing on that, let's say, phenomenological level, but not with the argument, yeah, that's really true. It's more like it's a subjective experience in that moment. Yes,
Mm-hmm. But a subjective experience, yes, just for me, yeah, it is the best possible, mm-hmm, teacher, yeah, I can have. People, mm-hmm, can lecture me all day, mm-hmm, long. If I don't pay attention to my life and myself and being present, I'm basically listening to podcasts nonstop. Mm-hmm. But that's just, you know, loading, mm-hmm, information into your brain, but it can also, mm-hmm, you know, dilute very quickly again. But yeah, being truly present with, mm-hmm, even when almost nothing, mm-hmm, is happening, that's where you have real an experiential experience.
Yes, and
you
for
learn.
Example, that's what I also say with the critical discussion on microdosing. We cannot show there are really impact. We cannot show negative impacts yet. But I also really always say more on, let's say, personal level of augmentation. But if you have a positive benefit of feeling present, seeing the colors of the world, that's a positive outcome.
Yeah.
Even if it's placebo, so what? But you have a positive outcome in that, mm-hmm, moment. But also I always feel, you know, it's the same problem I feel with microdosing, the hype, you know, like the, mm-hmm, psychedelic renaissance, there's the hype, and then there's now the hype with microdosing. Everybody thinks they can do it and know,
yeah,
it and can be a coach in 1 second, something like that. So I feel it easily goes over the top, and I'm really here to, I feel probably also to balance things and,
yeah,
really to help see, mm-hmm, things from different angles. And probably that would be a third core pillar that I always draw in, which comes really from shamanic traditions, that we need to always balance everything.
Yeah.
They work so much, mm-hmm, with working with all the elements, working with the alchemy, how things come together. But for my shamanic teachers that I have in Central America, I really learned this skill and this art of taking care of balancing things.
Yeah.
And that could really change the world. So in that combination of interconnectedness, presence and balance, that would be three core pillars. I will name a few more in the conversation.
Yeah. Wow, wonderful.
That's what I was wanting
to
do.
It's like, you know, like weaving together the...
With the Microdosing Institute, we always wanted to have a realistic viewpoint on,
mm-hmm,
microdosing, because,
mm-hmm,
all the expectations people have. So that we also wanted to bring balance into how we can work with microdosing in a realistic way. So, yeah.
Yeah, and oftentimes for most people, science and wanting to know how it works is the entryway. That's,
mm-hmm,
how they,
mm-hmm,
reach out to us, like, okay, I want to do this. I think it can, you know, help me, but I want to really understand. Then they come to us. And then once they start experiencing it, they start weaving, as you say. They,
mm-hmm,
start weaving those different types of levels of experience that come when you start with a practice like this. And,
yeah,
and then they suddenly understand, oh, there is a difference if I use and work with an intention for my day,
mm-hmm,
or for my project or for my family life. And I start being mindful of what I actually need and want and also want to create,
yes,
here for myself or for others. So I think it really kind of, nicely flows from one side to the next. And then the balancing act is also a really great one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you mind talking a bit more about your shamanic teachings? And also,
mm-hmm,
in recent times, we really became aware of actually the role of the elder.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd really love to refer to you as an elder,
mm-hmm,
in this psychedelics medicine space and therapy space. But what is an elder? What is that role in the shamanic societies?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Also important to clarify that I use it a lot lately, because,
mm-hmm,
it's in the process that I am in. Yeah, I draw very much on Mexican shamanic traditions lately, at least. I lived in India, I lived in the US, I studied Irish, Scottish, pagan traditions,
mm-hmm,
but lately I would say my focus is on Mexican traditions. I feel very connected there, my teachers there also. So at 53, after 53, you are considered to be an elder, to have collected enough life wisdom, knowledge, experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Only then you are allowed to do ceremonies.
Okay,
mm-hmm,
in the indigenous tribes,
yes.
In 53.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the golden age, so to say, yeah, that I entered, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then they really say then you are mature enough to hold that space and to work also through these layers of you know what the people bring with you. So that's kind of what I draw on. That's what I mean when an elder. But then in the bigger picture of an elder, this is again all on all the core pillars that we already discussed. So it is like what I really learned through my shamanic teachers, how much we have lost the roots and the belonging in our modern world, especially for me in Germany. It's up to date, it's still difficult to be rooted in Germany. Yeah, so I realized how big that topic is. Yeah, and from the shamanic traditions, not only that you are born in shamanic families, so also the bigger community, yeah, that you have your roots, that you have your belongings, that you have the teachings that belong to your tribe, that you live on that land, that you worship that land, that you live with the water of that land. Yeah, all everything is connected. So through these teachings, I really found my own way of connecting with being feeling rooted and feeling have a sense of belonging and meaning. Yeah, and that's kind of what I teach very much in my transpersonal teachings, in that I would say a light version. Yeah, not in a dogmatic sense. I'm really absolutely not dogmatic. But in the sense of getting an idea how dissociated we are in modern times. And I believe that only through, let's say, a moderate, a liberal rootedness, we can come back to that interconnectedness.
Yeah.
And in that way, I really gain a lot of knowledge from shamanic traditions and teachings. And I don't follow so much in a dogmatic way one tradition, but I learn so much about this roots, about this, everything needs a balance. We need to take care about everything. And so in that way, it's a wonderful, you know, like integration for me for modern science. But of course, not many people are open to that. I'm really a placeholder. I cannot generalize these ideas. It's more like I am here for clearly to always try to show the bigger picture. And always try to integrate many, many different approaches.
Yeah.
And of course, everything has downsides. So the downside can be, okay, it stays more on the general level. What can we do really? The details, the shadow aspects of how can it be really integrated? How can it be lived? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that's work in process for all of you, for all of us here right now. Yeah.
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 Beautiful set.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I really have a question about this, but it's more like I'm pondering, these days, you know, so many people like ourselves from Europe, the Western world and Western societies, where actually I think rooting is really a problem because we all like to travel so much and we're becoming digital nomads, or we are just, we don't, that sense of belonging to a physical place and worshipping our land and our water is not a concept that is very familiar to most of us.
Absolutely, of course.
Yeah.
And then we see those shamanic cultures, and you know, lots of people have gotten familiar with ayahuasca, and they look at the Shipibo culture or at the Huniquin tribe, for instance, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they have a very, very particular set of of views and actions and rituals, and I think for us, and then the medicine, of course, that they work with. So in this case, it's ayahuasca and also many other ones. But can we actually, like, does it make sense for us to really go to such a culture and try to embrace it and all the aspects that it has? Will we ever be able to understand, or is it maybe better for us, as you say, to take a bit more of a generalized approach and just study those shamanic teachings from where we come from and to up until where we can understand it and embrace it? And
very good question also, really. I would say, of course, it's not either or. For me, at least, I always say, let's not be black and white. There's not yes or no or right or wrong. But I feel really like nowadays, I also always say, we cannot go back. We are not brought up in shamanic traditions. We cannot go back 4,000 years.
Yep.
So it's more like we need to adapt and evolve further. I see more into the future that something can evolve further that we don't even know yet. And how I approach it, but that's my approach. It's an integrative approach to say, okay, I study culture, but not in the sense of taking something, in the sense of widening my understanding. And I would not call myself a shaman of that tradition that I study so long, or in India I lived, you know, in Buddhism and Hinduism ashrams, yeah, but I would not call myself like that. Mm-hmm. So I feel my understanding from the bigger picture integrative perspective is to broaden our limited understanding in a modern world.
Yeah.
That's what it can serve, but don't try to imitate it.
No.
Don't try to take it and do it and call yourself the Peruvian shaman or something.
It's better to implement those mm-hmm. traditions into modern ways, like you see the travel retreats, like Synthesis, for instance, mm-hmm. or other. They have a modern approach
mm-hmm.
with traditional.
Yes, yeah.
It's good to respect the values of those traditions
that,
and rituals
example,
and ceremonies.
And work with what's locally available.
Mm-hmm.
Here also we have such a variety of trees, and
mm-hmm.
I know now that some of my former colleagues are working within the paradigm of eco-psychology.
Yes,
and they work with the
yes,
trees and with the four seasons that
yes.
we, you know, experience very strongly here in Europe, to
yes.
work with those cycles to actually gain a deeper understanding of ourselves and grow as a person. So create a relation with the local nature.
Exactly. Usually I don't call it shamanic when I teach. I call it deep ecology approaches. Yeah.
Mm.
So it's like, of course, these are traditions here from pagan and, you know, like working.
We have our own traditions. We would almost forget, but it's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's more like broadening the perspective. Yeah? In the Western modern societies, we got so specialized, so individualized, that we lost the bigger picture. Everything came out of balance. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that would be like the fourth core pillar that I would like to point out today. So what I see, the power of psychedelics, in addition to the interconnectedness, or I feel there's a specific flavor to it, is the divine feminine for me, and Maria Papaspyrou from UK, who has founded an institute for psychedelic therapy in UK. Now I really appreciate her work. She has termed that she has coined that term femtheogens, so that she combines the feminine and entheogens in the sense of the feminine, you know, like let's say the biological, the original feminine, like giving birth, being able to give birth, being able to let a baby grow in the womb, would be a very nourishing, very feminine quality of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And she bridges this with the power of entheogens, and that could bring us that power, that feminine quality of connection, but in the sense of caring. Of course, masculine has also a sense of connection, but rather like it's a penetration, it's the sperm who wants to infertilize, and then the egg needs to do the work and bring that into life, So I really like to add that quality of course both masculine and feminine, but then the feminine, really the carrying something through into life, that psychedelics and plant medicines can teach us something about these qualities. And I have heard from many clients, I do a lot of integration therapy with clients worldwide, I have really from a lot of men also really heard that they have suddenly a new idea of caring, and suddenly they feel maybe this is a little bit like women feel when they have a baby in the home or something. I heard that many times for men,
I think both as men and women, in these through these experiences, we can unlock
mm-hmm.
new levels
mm-hmm.
and new, oh, I didn't know it was possible to feel this way. Oh, I didn't realize I am a carrier of life. Or, you know, and then that can relate to, that can become part of your mission, or that can become part of your intentions and commitments throughout the rest of your life.
And that would lead to a little bit of probably the fifth core pillar that I could point out, and also how my work just naturally evolves really over the years now. Lately I teach a lot of on transpersonal sacred sexuality or transpersonal sexuality intimacy in the widest sense, coming from a deep ecology approach. Being intimate with myself. I have a teacher in Mexico, they say intimacy means into me see.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Like see into yourself.
I'm intimate with myself, to be intimate with the world, So I feel what we need, so coming now maybe to the point of education beyond what we already discussed, I feel we need education on that level of intimacy, in the widest sense of being intimate with myself, in the world, with nature. Psychedelics can potentially support those who can and want to take that path.
And that's where microdosing also comes into place, that it, you feel more self-love and more respect for yourself, and then you can carry that out.
Becoming aware of your needs, for me that was an important one, that microdosing like really points me to, from the simplest thing like, oh, actually I'm dehydrated, I need to drink some water. Oh, actually, I'm really tired. I need to, you know, why don't I give myself, allow myself to rest at this moment or in this day, which wasn't the plan, but I should. I know I should. Yes. So that those kinds of realizations start to also unlock the possibility to be really honest and authentic with yourself in the first place.
Yeah.
And once you can be that with yourself, you can be that. Oh, let's try it with someone else too. Let's maybe just ask an open question or... Yeah. Things can become, can evolve from there.
Learn to listen to the signals that your body gives. As we have a lot of people in our community.
Instead of being dissociated.
Say like, I feel tired of the microdosing. And I said, okay, maybe that substance gives you a signal that you're running too fast and you need to slow down a little bit and just rest for a while and being in the present moment and doing that. And that's just also why sometimes we advise people to take it at night, of course, if it's in the way and you're constantly again tired of for instance the magic truffles. You also experience that in your personal experience.
I just wanted to point out one more point because I feel it's really important. So you are talking now really about primary needs, you know, and of course that's where we start, but I feel what we need as education for the future is exactly this whole training about our senses, sensuality, errors, sexuality, but in a much bigger picture than just the real act.
Because people have so many concepts about what sex is and what it should be.
Yeah, but you know, in the sense of, you know, like being connected with the world, as Joanna Macy, I like her very much, this deep ecology activist from the US, she says world as a lover. Yeah, that's kind of the idea, this idea.
Yeah, because in a way, you know, we were, before we started recording, we were talking about ecstasies. And ecstatic experiences for many people, they actually come from being in touch with the natural world. Like you enter a forest for the first time, or you stand somewhere, you take in a landscape or a mountain, or, you know, the majesticness of a mountain. Yes. There are so many ecstatic experiences that only nature can cause in that way.
Yeah, in the experience of oneness, in the experience of sensuality. Yeah. I teach a lot about errors, but errors, in the widest sense of that deep ecology idea of, wow, when I'm in touch with myself and when I'm in touch with everything around me, that has a flavor, that has a erotic, you know, like tension activity, pulsating. That's like a movement of life.
Yeah.
So in that way, allowing life to really flow through you and to be that, conscious of that. I think that also is some way is really a pathway to happiness.
Yes.
Because we can be with what we experience. And so it's again, being in that present moment. Yeah. Yeah, and using the senses, this is also something that I know for a fact that in the synthesis retreats and hopefully in many, many other retreats and ceremonies with plant medicine work, this is also an important part to get in touch with your own senses. And for instance, we rely so much on our sense of sight and I can talk a lot more about that. Like, for me, also visuals actually can be really distracting.
Absolutely.
In any sense, whether it's in an altered state or whether it's in day-to-day life. But we go so much with the visual already. So then to do an exercise where you're actually blindfolded or where everything is dark, then what is there? Then what happens?
Yeah.
And how do I experience it? And what does it make me feel like?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it powerless? Yeah. Is there resistance? Is there curiosity? Like then suddenly a whole new world opens up, strangely enough.
Yes.
That reminds me of the technique we did with the Beyond Experience program with the blindfulness.
Yes, it came out
it
of
was
my...
was really helpful for me.
Out of my near-death experience also, I specialized in dark retreat because that was really the most... After near-death experience, I went into dark retreat for many days. And that was the closest so far to the near-death experience. No substance could come closer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And,
for 3 days, you said?
Many days, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then since then I teach always working with the blindfold, shutting the visuals down and to get a connection with ourselves inside.
But can you speak about that darkness retreat? Like what is it like, especially for multiple days,
I mean,
to not
I
have
can
access
only
to your
speak
site?
For myself,
What happens in the sense of what makes it so powerful?
It was really like, you know, like... totally sober, no substances, so and it's like you lose the feeling of your body, but you feel your body, but at the same time you don't feel your boundaries with your body anymore because everything is dark anyways, and of course we cannot show it totally scientifically, but potentially you produce, you know, endogenes and to have altered states of consciousness, and then there are in these later days, it was really this profound experience being one with everything. Mm. And this is what I had in the tsunami. So it was the closest I was searching, you know, like, how can I come close to this experience, being one with everything? So that was there. But I don't recommend that. You need to be stable. You need to be experienced. I have 30 years of meditation and from Buddhist and Christian side. So it's not like it's advanced practice.
No.
But I used the idea of the blindfolds also.
Yeah. It helped me a lot to surrender also to the movements that the person who leads the when you are blindfolded.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very profound technique, and the ancient Greek used the technique of total darkness.
Yes, darkness, dream incubation
in
these temples. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Coming back to your other question, that would be the nightcap question. What's
mm-hmm.
that? The nightcap
question. Yeah. Because of there's signaling.
Mm-hmm.
Listening
yes,
to the signals of your body.
I was really experimenting, experimenting with the truffles here in the Netherlands, and so this for me it was like in the daytime. I don't know. I cannot say in the morning, I kind of did not feel to want to do anything. Yeah, and in the afternoon, it's kind of similar experience. Then I tried it out for the night. And I have sleep disturbances very easily, and suddenly I could sleep very well and wake up in the morning very fresh and very adventurous, but in a very effective way. So I get things done, but at the same time very creative. In the morning I'm a thinker, so usually I think, I read, I write, and it becomes even more creative, more evocative. So I really use it as a, you know, like as a practice form, as a spiritual, I use it as a spiritual practice. I use the Fetterman protocol as you promote it always, with interval phases where I don't do it and I experiment again. And I would really say I have clearly benefits for the sleeping and then in the daytime for a very creative, evocative mind, but it's very functional, I can really get work done.
That's similar, that microdosing has it. We always say it has a 2 days effect, so a lot of people report that the second day when they don't take the microdose, they still have positive effects. They feel also more in the present moment, more less mental distortion. So
I use it every other day, so for me it works best every other day, but better than every third day. It was going down and up, and now I have kind of a steady kind of experience. And I have many clients from the integration therapies. They also experiment here in Netherlands with the truffles, and they have several now who reported also it was really good for them in the night. But I have also some who say, okay, I like it in the morning. I have some who say, oh, after work when I'm really tired, now I take it in the afternoon. Then I have a really nice evening and night. It's really interesting.
Of course, it's good to emphasize that you don't do that with LSD or another substance, only with psilocybin-containing mushrooms.
Yeah.
But there was a study also that Torsten Passy mentioned it once to us, that it prolongs your REM sleep, or mm-hmm. your REM sleep
exactly.
psychedelics.
Yes.
So yeah, it could. It, and he suggested also that because your REM sleep is prolonged, that you wake up more
mm-hmm.
vivid and more vibrant,
yes.
and that's why maybe people with depression or
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
have positive
mm-hmm.
benefits from it. So
yes.
that's worth studying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And when do you take the microdose before you go to sleep?
Yes.
Is that
yeah.
like 7 o'clock and then
no.
3 hours
no,
later you go to
sleep?
Before sleep. Okay.
Because I take quite long to fall asleep, and so if I take it too early, then I cannot sleep.
Okay.
And if I take it directly before sleep, until I can sleep, I can sleep. So it kind of works for me
okay.
very well in that way. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know.
And do you know anything from either yourself or your clients how it affects the dreaming?
Yes, many report that, especially men who say, I never dreamt, now suddenly I can remember dreams. Yeah, that would be one outcome, but all the other aspects that we already mentioned, mm-hmm. I can really see. And I feel on that level, let's say in a rather normal, healthy population, quote unquote, it can be a tool, but as we say, let's not exaggerate expectations
no,
or benefits.
No. It's still anecdotal stories and subjective, but
yes.
we hear it a lot. Even the farmer who makes truffles,
yes.
he uses it in the night also.
Yeah.
He's almost 80 years old and he
nice
really benefits.
To hear that.
Yeah, he really benefits from the NICAP
mm-hmm.
protocol
mm-hmm.
in that case, yeah. And he is
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I think it also has to do with like yeah, maybe a bit of a change into, oh, you know, we're getting medications prescribed by a doctor. You take them typically always in the morning so that you benefit during the day. So like, but that is just one way of looking at medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're, you know, that people also increasingly experiment with all kinds of supplements, now with combinations that, you know, really complement each other. So for instance, the stacking protocol with microdosing, combining using the power of cacao for its heart opening qualities, but also it has a synergy with psilocybin.
Yeah.
So now, bit by bit, we're really starting to look into this kind of, I don't know, maybe it's alchemy or herbalism. So those roots are sort of coming back in.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, from my perspective, it makes sense that we also look at, oh, when do you actually take this? Or,
mm-hmm.
yeah, does it have to be in the morning? Actually, our nights are, sometimes I'm thinking like, really, if I didn't sleep well for a night, that day is also a completely different day.
Yeah.
It can be super challenging. So maybe we should actually prioritize our nights a bit more over our days, and then the quality of our dreams and the vividness and the quality
feel,
of rest.
I feel studies
is so
on
important.
The nightcap could be very very beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah, even for some people who have general anxiety,
yes.
and they take it during
mm-hmm.
the day, and they
mm-hmm.
think, okay,
mm-hmm.
their anxiety is strengthened, or so they don't have the benefits of microdosing. But it maybe it's worth checking out if during the night it could help them maybe. So
yeah.
Oh, I feel again, it's to be very have the flexibility, you know. You know what works
also
best for
that.
The individual
yeah.
person.
Yeah.
We need to see.
Exactly.
We need to find out.
Yeah.
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 We also collaborate with the Maastricht University and
yeah.
Kim Kuipers. She wrote a paper about psychedelics and the role of sleep
mm-hmm.
and also the role of in the guts, and that she thinks that also that it has to do with all those kind of things, that you sleep better, so you have all kinds of different benefits that
mm-hmm.
is different for everybody, of course. So,
yes, yeah. And
yeah.
in that way, really, I promote microdosing, that it is a potential tool for some people to experiment. It has, of course, then the quality of self-empowerment. You experiment with yourself.
Yeah.
Of course, there are teachers and classes whatsoever, but I feel it has very a potential for self-empowerment.
Yeah.
On a rather global scale, and that's kind of what I wanted to point out. My late work now is rather to focus really on the global population, not so much the clinical. That's good, that's important, that's getting done to
yeah.
some extent. But I would say I have really grown into that bigger picture of saying, but I'm really standing here as a for psychedelic science, really also for healthy general population, to say there's an ethical right. That's really important for me to use plant medicine, psychedelics. It's part of human culture on Earth. Yeah?
Yeah.
So I'm really standing up for that. And so that will probably lead to our other part of discussion also, to provide really good training, good education, good settings for healthy populations. And for
yeah.
example, I have many parents who now say, wow, I would like to send, you know, like my younger ones,
yeah.
now 18, young
yeah.
adults, or
oh,
to,
yeah,
you know, to have good and safe experiences.
Right.
And I say, like, wow, that's really a niche we have not filled yet, to probably come up for really, you know, young adult youth camps,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, we discussed that.
For
maybe
initiation.
Retreats for initiation with your
mm-hmm.
with your parent, father or mother,
mm-hmm.
and with your son or daughter.
Like,
I think that
and
that
again,
could
we
be
reconnect rite of passages. We reconnect with our roots to some extent. So probably that's the point. What I really want to point out now in our
yeah.
more like towards the end of our discussion is like. For clearly, it's not enough to just stand for the clinical. Of course, that's kind of one way to try
yeah.
to establish. And of course, for treatment, that's a different discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But if we stop there, that's not a
yeah.
point. And so I would say I really stand here now to say, okay, it's a part of our culture.
Yeah.
And to stand up for that.
Yeah.
And here our collaboration, I think, can
yeah.
be very
it's
fruitful.
It's almost like an opportunity to
mm-hmm.
rebuild our
mm-hmm.
culture,
mm-hmm.
to reinfuse the meaning that might have been
mm-hmm.
lost a little bit
yeah.
over the past generations.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you say, if you work with mom and dad and daughter and son dynamics, that there is this whole generation that has a new opportunity
yeah. yes.
to take to really
yeah,
experience
to
this in a different way,
yeah.
to understand the values, to understand the true meaning, whereas the past generations, including us, most of us have started experimenting with psychedelics as if it were a drug, a recreational
yeah.
drug. And then we had to make all these mistakes and see how it's not work, how it's not very meaningful, and grow into something new and something later.
Mm-hmm.
And then up until
yeah.
now, we see people of all ages going
mm-hmm.
through meaningful psychedelic experiences for the first time.
Yeah.
Yes.
But what if you can start off like that?
Mm.
You build a whole new generation that is much stronger and much more empowered
yeah.
and much more... Yeah, that has a deeper understanding.
Yeah. You
yeah,
already
sure.
see it in the younger generation of psychologists and psychotherapists
mm-hmm.
that they are more open to work with
yeah.
plant medicine than
yeah.
the older generation. And
yeah,
yeah it was also
and
always one of my hidden agenda
mm-hmm.
why I wanted to work and build a platform with microdosing, because yeah, you can. It's really a good way to safely and gently learn the ways of how powerful psychedelics can be
mm-hmm.
and yeah and
mm-hmm.
open the discussion
mm-hmm.
and
absolutely.
Also we like to call it ending the stigma, but
mm-hmm.
yeah
yeah
breaking
absolutely.
The stigma
yeah.
and make it more yeah
yeah and
that is the
really
condition
educate, yeah.
education
yeah.
and ending the stigma
mm-hmm.
those are like the conditions, and once that is yeah, that is removed, we can really go full on. And I think you mentioned ritual as well, or rite of passage.
Rite of passage
is also
rituals,
an important
yeah.
element.
As a
yeah.
as a tool, let's say, to reconnect, you know. And that's the point that I wanted to make. So the transgenerational work that I started then, after I had the transpersonal PhD, after I had all these insights, I came back to Europe and again worked for many years in psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
And then brought this transgenerational aspect, and since then I always work in three generations. When I have clients, when I do therapy, coaching, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I work at least in three generations backwards,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of, okay, how was the biography of your parents?
Okay.
How was the biography of your grandparents? What patterns do you unconsciously repeat? And how potentially can you come out of it if it's unhappy?
Yeah.
How can you increase happiness?
Mm.
And so I feel that's the powerful tool, and again it's like becoming a full circle, coming back to interconnectedness.
Yeah.
It's all about finding roots, belonging, interconnectedness,
yeah.
the quality of the feminine,
yeah.
being in the present moment, being in this body, in this world. Then psychedelics can enhance this experience potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you maybe potentially give an example of this transgenerational work? So, for
mm-hmm.
instance, what would it mean
mm-hmm.
if, or could you just give an example of how something that happens two generations back is still holding people into a certain conditioning, and then how a release of that might look like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on the one hand, we have really strong epigenetic and genetic research really showing the impact on the DNA, and how the epigenetics explains it. It's like then we experience again a certain trauma, and then this information gets activated on the DNA. So potentially like sleeping, all the information is sleeping on the DNA. We have an experience, all the back past experience can get activated as knowledge or wisdom or something like that. And I mean, we did narrative studies there in the psychiatry in University Heidelberg on many, many clients. We worked with the example of war trauma, but I expanded it on like looking at general patterns of happy or unhappy lives. And there are not many differences actually between us. Usually it's about unhappy love relationships. In whatever way, betrayal or having lost a partner, or through war, of course, having lost and then being raped, etc., things like that. So it's like everything around unhappy love relationships and marriages, everything around betrayal, then of course hidden children, abortions, loss of children, this kind of things, and then any kind of other family secrets, taboos. And usually when I look at three generations, we already see such patterns. They were unhappy in that way, they were unhappy in that way, how is your life? So once they understand the patterns, I can help them, or they can help themselves to say, but now in that present moment I can change for good. Now I can change to live a more happy life. That would be one core example. I found in 99% these kind of topics.
And I, what I also think is so important about this work is that it takes away the feeling of like guilt, or I am not enough, or I've done everything wrong, or why, you know, why am I suffering? It brings it a bit more into perspective, like, oh, I'm actually following a program that was, you know, programmed into me, and and now that I know, now I can make my own choices.
It's again the bigger picture, seeing the bigger picture, being connected, being rooted in that moderate liberal sense that I promote. Then suddenly I would really say this is kind of, we talked about the essence, what is really my message now, after all that discussion. I would really say that's exactly that. We need to see the bigger picture. It is not enough to see our modern results, our modern scientific approaches. We need to understand the development of humanity on an evolutionary level, political level, scientific level, and integrate it further into something new can develop. I really have this kind of vision that in like in another wave of human development, we will move beyond that split of shamanism, modern science, then there will be, you know, something further
evolved,
further integrated, further evolved in integration.
And how do you think that microdosing could be play a role in that?
Like, I feel like
for treatment, or more like aftercare, more as an aid? And
I feel on all levels, it could be like, I feel it could be a complementary, a part of a treatment formally, and it can be like for a general population, rather like it can become a practice. Maybe someone don't want to call it spiritual practice, call it mindful practice. It can become a mindful practice. And if you take the example of the truffles or mushrooms, the spores, you know, like that, the spores literally and symbolically, the spores can spread and can evolve further.
Well, we can extend this again. I think we've done this many times while speaking with people like you, who play a significant role and have a deep understanding of this. But then, of course, there's the mycelial network again, also how it creates, literally in many senses, it creates connections between people and between worldviews and understandings and tools that we have, practices that we can use. So it really creates a stronger network, and I feel like it can really grow into something stronger that people can build upon and build out this worldview in reality, you know.
I feel that's really a good point, probably, that we distilled right now from the interview. I would really say there's a potential, of course, with the caution and with the risks, and not with a right or wrong or truth answer, but with a potential for evolution.
Yeah, a potential to get us rooted as a collective if we do it in the right way. Mm-hmm. So I also feel like, right, we still have a bit of a way to go in front of us through education, which is also what we're doing, and we won't stop doing that. And there's still many ways in which we can educate ourselves as a collective.
So, that's why we now are doing the project with James Fadiman, the International Microdosing Coaching Association, to bring people who are working with microdosing and psychedelics, of course, in general, bring those people together to educate themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's also where you come in as an elder to, to pass all the knowledge that we can evolve with
to be a guide together. A guide for this collective and offer some guidance there.
Yes, and it's really great that you took that on. I think there's a lot of energy, and I feel that you really do it in a good way to try to balance the different perspectives and the aspects, and to educate, to create caution also. Yeah. So I think your contribution is important, and I'm more than happy to contribute in whatever way that will be beneficial for the future.
And do it in a humble way, what you said. Mm-hmm. That really resonates with me.
In the end, we're all servants. We're all servants of that bigger picture. It's not that we are deciding anything here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any final comments, or shall we wrap this conversation up for
today? I really want to say thank you, because I really feel there's really a good energy that you bring together. Also, you know, how your synergies bring together, and that you really create a hotspot, a positive sense, a hotspot here. For all of us internationally to really create a good, you know, good level of education, of profound information, solid information, and I'm more than happy to grow further with you also. Yeah. Thank you for being here also, and for doing that work.
Yeah, thank you too for your time and energy, and really.
I hope. Cheers to that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for listening to this episode. At the Microdosing Institute, we advocate for a realistic, well-informed perspective on microdosing. And that is why we've created a comprehensible video course that incorporates the global community's experience, but also the science and all the evidence and expertise offered by our mentor, Dr. James Fadiman. This is a self-guided course that comes with lifelong access to our community and our monthly online meetups. You can find it on microdosinginstitute.com or through the link in our Instagram bio, and look for the video course, Explore Microdosing.